give that shit up, you can concentrate on golf.
If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
You play ball like a girl!
Hi everybody, and welcome to a Roy Orbison Tattoo Podcast with me, Colm, and my co-hosts Mossy and Paul. This is episode 9 of season 2. If it is your first time listening, I would advise to go back to the start and listen from episode 1, as we will refer to previous shows from time to time. This show does contain film spoilers, so if you've not yet seen the film, I would advise watching it first. It might help you understand a little bit better. Now for today's show, I hope you enjoy.
Welcome everybody, and today we are joined by Mr. Stephen Fitzgerald from the Nafina Club in Dublin. Welcome, Stephen.
Well, lads, how's the farm?
Hey, Stephen, how are you getting on?
Thanks for taking time out of your hectic schedule to join us.
Thanks for having me. It must mean I'm in the elite category, is it?
Oh, here. We're at the top of the list here, like, we under no illusions about it. Good. So we are talking about Mighty Ducks 2. I suppose it was, we did Mighty Ducks 1 in season 1, and it was probably one of our better listened to episodes. So we're following up with Mighty Ducks 2. And I suppose just from the point of view of coaching youth, teenagers, it might be applicable to an awful lot of coaches. So first thoughts, what did you make of the film, Stephen?
Yeah, look, it was very good to see it again since I watched it the first time, and watching it with a different eye now. It was very enjoyable, actually, yeah.
Paul, Massey?
I watched the three of them together, and first one was good, second one was went down a scale, and I tell you now, we're definitely not reviewing D3. It's one of the worst films I've ever seen.
Paul?
You know what? If Mossy's saying D3 is poor, I definitely don't want to see it. I'm not being bad or anything, but it's definitely the worst film we've watched through this so far. I thought the acting in it was very poor, and yeah, there was very few actors now who you'd have an affection for in it.
I suppose, look, it is, let's be straight off the bat, it's pure advertising for Disney. Like, Disney bought a franchise in the National Hockey League after in late 92, so after the success of Mighty Ducks, the original, and they owned the team Anaheim Ducks for, I think it was 10 or 12 years before they sold it in the mid-noughties. But the stadium that was on, Anaheim Arena, they owned that, they owned the franchise, and I suppose it's just a publicity thing for Disney as much as anything else, and I suppose the quality of the film kind of... I suppose, look, it's the typical kind of Disney, everything feel good, nothing too bad in it. But how did you think Mr. Coach Bombay progressed from season 1 to season 2, or did he regress?
I thought he regressed. A lot of this is just related to the film, but I know at the end of the film, the first one he went off to try and be a pro hockey player, didn't see the point of it. And yeah, there was just an awful lot of plot holes in it.
Where did Charlie's mother go?
I was thinking the same thing, Massey.
Did she not get married?
To who?
Didn't she remarry? Isn't that what your man said? Yeah, and at the start.
Yeah, she remarried. That was fairly quick, wasn't it?
Must have been a green card or something involved.
he was some buckle, wasn't he?
Some boy is right.
Another plot hole is, so off with the Icelandic one. Like, it only lasted a night, and that was the end of it. Like, there was no more said about it. What happened on that night like that? It never went again.
I say that's a film you'd like to see, Paul.
The ice cream wasn't nice, I think.
Maybe.
Yeah. In fairness, the two boys were very good when they were questioning them, weren't they?
Corbin, that's right, yeah. So, look here, as I said, the film, I wouldn't say it was the greatest. Massey, what do you think of how do you rate his coaching from progressed or regressed?
It definitely regressed. I think he got a bit of ahead of himself when he got offered the gig, and he forgot his values and where he came from. It took him a while to get back to regaining the trust of the team, basically. But he was regressed, definitely. Fitzy. What do you think yourself? Fitzy didn't watch the first film.
He has watched.
I've seen the first film, I have, yeah. Of course, I had one grew up watched it and played with on their rollerblades, didn't they? They were a Mighty Duck. And actually, I was thinking last night, that doesn't really happen anymore, does it? The old roller hockey, street hockey.
I was trying in the house to last my daughter. She's 5. She broke her wrist. So won't be happening again.
Yeah. Out with that. Good man, Massey. Parenting another parenting mark for you. But you know what? I said it probably goes back to the advertising of it, that like obviously Disney, like they had the NHL team, they're obviously trying to sell the seats there. Like it, you know, I'd imagine it was more popular in the 90s just because of the film and because of the advertising associated with that. But also like the thing with being based in Anaheim, obviously with Disney owning the team there, but like it was when Gretzky went to LA, I think was the late 80s, I think it might be in 88 or 89, and popularity of, like, as I said, it's with all American sports, it's about getting in coin, and I suppose the popularity of that and the advertising that comes with it, associated with it, probably all, I suppose, look, it's the same thing when tennis, Wimbledon used to be on, we'd be out with tennis rackets, and when now Grand National is on, we'd be up building fences, and when the Tour de France is on, we'd be up cycling around.
Building fences.
Yeah.
No, that never happened, right?
What?
So we clearly have different
childhoods.
Building fences when the Grand National was on.
We used to cut down
benches. Crumbling on your horse pile, no?
You're the real horse.
What are you trying to allude to there, Stephen?
Just because the Grand National was on, and then you've been now thinking you were a jockey.
Again, they mixed up with the jockey, another jockey from Crumlin.
Good hurler, yeah.
Yeah, very good hurler.
I think Fitzy made a good point there about you don't see it happening as much. You don't see the kids playing on the streets as much as before. And like, because they're all on their iPhones, their pads, whatever it is. When you come out of school, first thing you see at like in a secondary school is like kids down on their phones straight away. Not running around, kicking a ball around or chasing or whatever, is beating each other up or anything like that. They're on their phone straight away. You drive by any bus stop tomorrow and look at the people waiting at the bus stop. What do they do? They're all on their phone. So people are getting less active. They're not communicating as much. And it's something that we're losing. And it's something that we'll pay for in time to come, I do believe myself.
So you're saying there should be, people shouldn't be getting the bus to work. They should be rollerblading to work, should they?
Yeah, they should be rollerblading to work. Yeah, one. No, what I'm talking about is they're not having conversations anymore. Just have a look tomorrow. They're all on their phones. Nobody talking. It's the same them. They come home. They come into their house. They're on their PlayStation, their phones, their iPads, whatever it is. They're not out in the street playing football, hitting a slitter around, whatever it is. You don't see it as much.
But, you know, I don't know if you've seen it. I'll retweet it there when the show's out. But there was the Irish Times. Somebody wrote in saying that the kids are out there in an apartment block and there's a communal area down the bottom, obviously, somewhere. And the kids are playing there and they're getting more noisy during the day and the people work from home, can't concentrate and blah, blah, blah. And what should she do about it, you know? And the response was actually, well, you need to talk to the management agency about it, that, you know, that's not acceptable and blah, blah. And you're going like, it is acceptable. It's a right, like it's in the UN law charter of rights for children to be able to play. And I suppose it's just something that I suppose I know with different times 20, 30 years ago when we were all young fellas baiting around the place, but you just don't see, I suppose, the safety of it. It's probably a little more, parents are more conscious of it.
I'll give you a good one. We got a basketball hoop for Dara here and put it outside the front house, and he was outside playing with it, and the next door neighbour came out from twice to tell him to stop playing. He was going to call the guards that he was being too noisy.
Your job?
In the middle of the day. No, honest to God. He came out and said, and if that's not moved, the guards will be here. So, anyway, after a few friendly words, we haven't heard from him since. But yeah, that's, he came out, like, and there was a group of kids that came around.
What's a few friendly words, Fitzy?
Come here, would you please refrain from calling the guards? He's all right. But no, and a group of kids came around, and they were all playing with it, and he ran them a lot. So, and we haven't seen them since. So, I wonder I don't really know. Crankiness, old age, society, I'm not really sure what's the problem, but.
It's just small-mindedness, really, isn't it?
I can hear it. And then there's other, like, there's some people who give out there in that public domain, and then there's other people who use Twitter to go mad and be cranky on.
Yeah,
but I suppose that's the beauty of it. At least, you know, if you were doing it on Twitter, people can switch you off, you know, whereas if that man next door, Fitzy, continues to badger you, it's hard to switch him off, you know. But look, I think it's a societal thing, like.
It seems to be a societal thing, yeah.
But it's like you see some schools, I don't know if I gave this example before, where you see some schools where they're not allowed to run around at lunchtime. They're walking around. Yeah,
because they'd be sued.
They're sued. Like, I can't remember what I said on the show earlier. Like, I remember working in a couple of schools before, and there was a group in sixth class, and it would have been all the way up from the same class, from second class up to sixth class, three groups. And I asked one of them one day, do you know such and such from the other sixth class? And they're like, what? Who? I was like, whatever his name, Jimmy. No, don't know him. And I was thinking, why would you not know somebody? You're in school with them for 5 years in the same year group. And I asked them, why would you not know? And then I was in another school one day and all the kids knew each other. And I was trying to figure out what was the difference. Why did one school, did all the children know each other and the other school not know each other? And I just came to me straight away that one school, they're allowed to play football at lunchtime, are allowed to run around. So they're picking teams, they're talking to each other, they're communicating. And the other school, they're in the yard and they weren't allowed to run. They just had to walk around. So they're just staying in their, like what they are now in their pods and stuff. It's just something simple. It's just ridiculous, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Like I find just from being in schools now a bit at the moment that the more rural schools with, let's say, where the principal would probably know every parent, might be, let's say, classes in the school, like they're much more laid back. Just like if you're in a school, let's say that's up near my house where there's three classes at each age group or four classes at each age group, like for the principal there to know what way a parent will react to something is a lot harder. So they're probably a little bit more, I suppose, skeptical of things. And so I suppose being just a little bit more PC with what they do.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you kind of touched on the data, kind of like therein lies the problem is parents, isn't it?
Parents.
Oh, yeah.
Across the board, either they're too for it or too against it or too precious or whatever it is, but it ultimately comes down to the parents.
Yeah, like you'd hear some of the stories there now of the WhatsApp groups and the parents' WhatsApp groups in classes. And yeah, I'd feel sorry for the teacher a lot of times, but story for another day. But anyway, back to the film. I suppose, like, look, he got injured. He came back. He got offered the gig out of nowhere, got offered a most prestigious underage gig in America. And he rounded up the troops. And I suppose, like, getting them back at the start. And he said it, like, what have you been doing? And that's, I suppose that's important for GAA teams and GAA clubs to, the down season isn't just a down season where they shut up shop where individuals shut up shop. Like there's obviously some individual responsibility there, wouldn't you say?
Depends on the age group really, isn't it? You'd expect that an older, say a teenager even, would look after himself in the off season like they're doing a bit. The younger ones you'd expect should be okay in terms of fitness wise. They should be doing a bit in school or they're playing different games or, you know, they're running around the whole time. So that wouldn't be as much of an issue. But you're talking, say, like a 14-year-old, 15-year-old.
They're not doing, you said 5 minutes ago, so they're not doing any running around anymore.
But that's the word I use, should, fall, if you just listen back. So they should be doing these things. But as you're in the film there, what age, about 14, 15 years of age?
I'd say 15, 16, yeah.
Yeah, they need to be doing something. Like, you know, what is, like, in the off-season, what can you do as a GA coach? Maybe have a couple of sessions every month of playing basketball indoors or Olympic handball or something. Just change it up. Just have them doing something. And so it's not like you're coaching them hurling or you're coaching them football. You're getting a break from that, but you're just keeping them active. You're keeping them involved. And they're, as you said, they're not might be getting the opportunities in schools anymore to be doing it. So it might be something we could think of.
Yeah, I think, and it's actually interesting, the FAI brought a thing out there yesterday saying that lads at the particular age that the Mighty Ducks or Team USA were at should be specialising in a sport, whereas all research would be counter to that, saying they should be still getting a diversification of sport as much as possible, you know. And I think, like, even no matter what the age group, like, I think lads and girls get a huge enjoyment out of sampling different sports in the off season. Be it five-side soccer, playing a small little bit of tag rugby, or be it American football or whatever it is, just something else that just gives them a different engagement on the pitch while still working on a lot of the skills that are going to be transferable to their predominant sport, you know?
Do you know the way a lot of coaches now are going to different sports to find different angles?
Yeah.
Surely players playing different sports are going to benefit from learning different things to apply to their own sport, either movement or whatever it is. So
absolutely.
It's kind of baffling that the FAI came out with that. Although, is it really actually? But
have any of you read Champagne Football?
I'm reading it at the moment. Yeah,
I have it on the stairs, really, ready to read.
Like, it really is. It's outrageous stuff.
So then it's not really surprising that they're coming out with that. Like, although you would think you would think that they might have learned some sort of lessons. But anyways.
But now just Strauss, looking from the FAI's angle there, and I'm not agreeing with him whatsoever. I think Ireland is a bit more unique than other countries around Europe in terms of the amount of sports players would play, as in field sports, like the, your Gaelic football, your hurling, your rugby, they're all stamped in them sports. Where in other countries, they wouldn't have that. They'd be more into their athletics, maybe basketball, handball, which would probably be more beneficial towards them. But that's just something maybe that's coming from the FAI's point of view.
Yeah, and I suppose like from a player's perspective, Dinda, like from be it whatever 15 plus, like the off season is an ideal chance to try to get. To keep developing, be it individually and be it the clubs or county boards or whoever, giving programs that young players can do, like just from a, let's say, agility. What can they do to increase the agility, or what can they do to increase their, I said, kicking off their weaker foot or striking from their weaker side? Like simple things like that can be done. But like for players even older than that, then, like it's important that, I suppose, the gains that you make in a year, you don't start in level one this year, get up to level five, and then take a down season or an off season, go back to level one and restart again. Like if you can cut back and go from level five down to level three by the time you come back next January, that gives a scope to go to level six this year. For players, it is important for some sort to be conscious of it, that if they're wondering why they're not winning championships or not improving, then they might have to look a small bit at what they're doing individually outside of the combined sessions.
I think in the period of time that we're talking about now, I don't think you should be on about levels, because, and then you're going on about the level six and my head is frying.
Sorry, Rossi. That's going on. You're like Donald Trump there. You can't come past four.
But then the other side of that is, how much do they know about it? If their heads are buried in their phones and buried in their PlayStations, they probably looked around to sit and do whatever it is. Like, how much are they told? You remember when you were 14 or 15, no one could tell you anything. So how much are they told or educated about the benefits of doing X, Y, Z in the off season for going forward? Like, is that a place where maybe we're lacking? I don't know the answer to that, but
it's like when you're looking after a team and you have your last game of the year and you just forget about it for next year. You don't give them programs and stuff, I suppose, at club levels. Possibly. Yeah.
And I suppose, look, it's not when you're saying give them programs, Massey, you're not talking about giving them anything that's going to be too strenuous,
but just something
that can help them themselves without having to monitor them. Something they can test themselves, as I said, be it a skill challenge, kicking with their weak foot or something like that. There are simple things they can do themselves. Like, so
I remember talking before a fella who came back from America, and he would have been a big GA guy and would have had no time for soccer or rugby or anything like that. And he was living in America for a while, and he came back and he started coaching local teams. And what he found then was that he came around to really appreciating the young lads playing soccer at lunchtime in school. And I was asking why that, and he says, to be honest with you, it's the best way for them developing their left foot side. Because the ball's coming at them from all angles and they have to adapt to it, they have to change direction, they have to be able to kick it. And he said, I never realised that until I came back and actually witnessed them actually doing that in the schoolyard. So, like, as we said there from Fitzy there earlier on, like, absolutely other sports are going to gain things from that will benefit you in hurling or Gaelic football or whatever your sport is.
I suppose another thing that came up early enough in the show as well, like that, no, he was doing the sharpening. I don't want to be here sharpening the skates forever. Like, I was just thinking, what's the Irish equivalent to that? Is that a fella making hurleys in the backshed for the next 10 years and just barely scraping by? But I suppose, like,
looking, it's the fella fixing the hurleys in the back of the shed.
Fixing hurleys, sorry, Pat.
Paul, did you say hurleys there, did you?
What? Did you say it again?
Did you say hurleys there, Paul, did you?
Cut that.
Littlewood's vote coming up. Yeah, but like one of the other things I thought came up early enough, once they got into the setup with the USA team, was the whole having a tutor. And like, I suppose it's very important, and it'd be something that we'd be more conscious of now than it would have been before, about that when players go to college. Like, we've been involved with college teams in some capacity, like the importance of education, like, it supersedes everything else, really, doesn't it? Like, there's no point in trying to get a player into college just to play hurling if you're not going to give him an education or give him something that can take him out to the real world afterwards. Like, it is something that, I suppose, like, even going back on last week when Mick Kelly was saying to Phil that, you know, don't worry, the GA will sort you out with a job. But like those days are, well, look, they're kind of gone. You know, players need an education now to back them up, don't they?
Yeah, no, here, I'd agree. And even going down to them younger age groups, when teams are in, we'll say, and I know the thing came out there about changing the age groups in GA again there between under 17, under 19, under 20, is it under 18? Like, they keep making these rule changes, and I don't think there's a whole lot of evidence there backing up the decisions that they're making. And to the best of my knowledge, they're not doing enough, I'd say, surveying and talking to people who are on the ground operating. Like, I know of a number of teams who are working with, we'll say, leaving cert age groups, and we'll say there's training on Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, that on a Tuesday evening, that we'll say training starts at 7:30, from 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock, that there's maths grinds on, or there could be physics or chemistry or something Irish grinds on. Like, that would be common enough practice in county teams. And like, I know soccer, we'll say League of Ireland under 17, under 19 teams, that would be common practice. So I think there's a bit of that going on, and it's really important, because when these players are, and some clubs are doing it as well. I know Erin's Oil there in Finglas, a really good club, have a program in place where they get students in, the Leaving Cert students in, and they give them an hour every Friday evening. And then we'll say every fourth Friday evening, they go off and they get a guest speaker in, or they go and visit one of the local colleges like TUD or DCU or Trinity or whatever, you know. So that sort of stuff, ingraining that into what's happening with your team, will lead to more attention and the development of better people.
Yeah, and I suppose it's something actually you spoke about before, Paul, about Paddy Christie being very much so about getting the education above everything else. Like, being a part of the football team is great, but why won't you go into college and being a part of that football team as well? And like, it is important. And I suppose, like, to see it in the show was good to see as well, that even no matter how good you are at hurling football or whatever sport it is, that education is important. And like, Rossi and Stephen, like, you've both been involved in college teams as well, like that. Like, how do you try to get, let's say, the student or the players or the person who mightn't be that into the academic side, and they're enjoying the hurling or football or camogie or ladies football, like, what can, is there anything you can do for them to kind of just, I suppose, they're probably sick of their parents badgering them at home, but it is important that it gets home to them that, like, you have to do the books, like.
Well, for me, it's all about, like, I wasn't involved in, like, I was involved in teams in college, but I wasn't involved in the education side of things. But if a player is unhappy, it's going to affect your team. So you have to try to figure out why they're unhappy, or what can you do for them to whatever. So maybe you just chat to them. Maybe you might put them in touch with a tutor or someone else in another year group who might be able to help them along. Maybe even speak to their lecturers and see what can you do to help them. But in terms of, like, a lot of coaches are in it for themselves and for the team only. But as I said, if there's something, you have to find out what's the issues with the players and try to help them best they can. And if you help them, they perform better for you, I believe, and better for the team.
Yeah, I'd agree with Massey there. And look, to be honest with you, the team I've been involved in and the college have been really, really good at prioritising education, and there's so much support out there for them. But I also think that if you're there and you're able to talk to the player about more than just sport, and you're there to help them with their education, that you get better buy-in from them. You know, that they kind of look at you more than just as someone who's looking to win a championship with them, and someone who actually genuinely cares about them, maybe, and they put in better effort for you. So it is very, very important, yeah.
And I suppose back to the film then, I know, first of all, the Trinidad and Tobago jerseys, what do you make of them? I'd love to be your favourite, Paul.
No, what make were they? They weren't Adidas anyway.
I'd say they got them printed in the local hippie shop by the looks of things.
It looked like they're having a great time, though.
They look very happy.
12-1 down, and they're having the right time, aren't they?
Yeah, I'd say, I don't think Trinidad and Tobago now would be renowned ice hockey.
A stronghold.
Yeah,
a stronghold.
Yeah. But they were, like, I suppose...
They said that about the bobsled team in Jamaica, but...
They did, and look at us boys now, yeah. Like, they would have, I suppose, then we would have came across the, I suppose, yeah, the nemesis Wolf in the show when they had the press conference at the Coliseum in LA, and Wolf was on about free speech and all this jargon. But as the games went on, when they actually played them, Bombay was actually dressed like Wolf when they played them. Like, is it a common thing for coaches to imitate other coaches? No, maybe not physically, but when, I suppose, you're looking at other coaches and going, oh yeah, like, I want to be more like him. Like, is it a common thing that coaches would do to try to, I suppose, play the same way that, like, let's say Jim McGuinness now, oh, I want to be like Jim McGuinness and we're going to play this tactics like?
First of all, it was Wolf, the fella who used to be the Statoil ads years ago.
He looked like him, all right? I don't know.
Is he, yeah?
I'm not sure, but he's might be his twin brother or something. But yeah, the second thing, if you remember the year of Kieran Donaghy when he moved full forward for Kerry, and I think his first game was against Longford. That summer, I think nearly every football team in the country moved a midfielder into the edge of the square.
Yeah.
When Jim McGuinness, our side team, started playing sweepers in hurling that were successful, a lot of copycats. You hear of teams getting, this team down the road have ice bats. We better get the ice bats. It's a lot of following. And I think it's because teams are maybe, our trainers, the coaches are scared that they're going to be left behind. If that club is, if it's good enough for that club, why can it not be good enough for us? But if you don't know what you're doing it for, the reason behind it in the first place is pointless.
Yeah, must I think, there's an awful lot of imitation going on with real understanding why you're trying to do it. It's like the, I suppose, that idea of, we'd say, the under 14 manager going to Croke Park and having a look at Jim McGuinness doing his warm up with Donegal, and then he arrives back on Tuesday night and tries to do the warm up with his under 14 crumbling Division A team, like, you know. And it's not the way it works, like.
I think a lot of coaches do it because they feel that if they don't do it, then they could be hammered or they could be left behind. So then, look, we'll adapt to this. And then if it works for them, surely it'll somehow work for us. And maybe they just don't have the ability to think of it and then be like, wait, how can I beat this system? Or how can I adapt it to suit my own needs, you know?
Yeah, possibly. And it might be a case of, oh, well, the players in such and such are doing it down there, and our players hear that the players in Crumlin are doing it this way and we're not doing it. Why aren't we doing it? Coach just doesn't want to be saying, oh, he's clueless, he's not up with modern times or whatever.
I'd say during the lockdown there now, Massey. I'd say back early in the summer when clubs are going, geez, the crowd blood down the road, or training twice a week, and sure, yeah, we're going around in pods of groups of four and stuff like that. I'd say there was a lot of kind of copycat like that.
Yeah, and Colm, even talking about lockdown there, so obviously there was a lot of really good seminars put on by the GA and by different counties and different provinces, just an assortment of different stuff. But understanding the application of knowledge to your setting is really important. And I don't think some coaches are as good as they think they are at applying knowledge to different contexts. Like,
calling anyone out there now, Paul?
No one in particular. That's not the type of production we run.
It's not the type of person he is either, Colm.
Yeah, true. But Massey, you're on about imitation there, Massey. Do you think there'll be many teams coming up with a new symbol to put in the back of the jersey like the Limerick Hurlers?
I'm sure it will be. It'll come out. Remember, was it Armagh used to have their something written on their wrists? Then the following year, every county was doing it. Yeah. Not every county, every club was doing it. If something works, people are going to copy. That's what it is. I think
it's not necessarily a bad thing, though, is it? It's also some coaches looking for any little bit that will give them an advantage.
Yes, but I think they have to be able to know why they're doing it, how it's going to help their team. Like, you might see something you like from another team and say, yeah, that might work well, but you might have to just adapt it slightly for yourself. That's the way I look at it anyways. But
yeah, so it's like an activity or an exercise you do in training. Like, it's something that if I'm doing one, it's something I'm doing applicable to the group I have. And Fitzy, if you're looking after the minor team in the club and you go, geez, that's a great one, I'm going to do that with the lads, but you don't know why you're doing it or what's the purpose of it, that's where it can fall down, you know. So like maybe every coach does understand what they're doing and why they're doing it. But I suppose if they spent a bit of time kind of challenging their own thoughts and methodologies as to why it might work for them, it might help a lot of fellas as opposed to just carte blanche, copy and paste it.
Like, I think the best example really is it. Like, you look back at Mike Bassett and his 4-4-2. Like, at the time, nearly every club team played 4-4-2. Then the trend came to 3-5-2. And now it's back to like a 4-2-3-1 or whatever. You know, a diamond. Like, teams are all just copying each other. Like, most teams are 4-3-3, sorry, I should say. Like, most clubs are playing with that system now. I think because it's working for... I was going to say Manchester United there, but nothing is working for them. Well, if it's working for Liverpool, why can it not work for your Burnies, whatever? But you have to be able to adapt. Like, you have to. We said it before. Like, you have to get a system that suits your players. And I think it's the same for training. Like, if you have to find out what sort of training is good for them and what way they're going to improve. Right, get to know your team. Get to know your keep. Go back there.
Back to the film. Then we had what I thought was going to be a cameo from Keenan and Kel fame. When he was abusing Jesse, and he was on his case all the time. But like when they did get Russ, I think was his name, when they did get down and he brought the team out to play his team, street hockey, like that was kind of going back to the basics of what we were saying earlier on, that like I thought his brother was actually the best coach on the show of everyone there, the older brother. He was kind of coaching the kids through what the mistakes and how to react and what they should be doing and getting back up and stuff like that. But like they basically went back to why they play. Just going out, bunch of friends, no coach, no parents on the sideline shouting, telling you what to do, and just playing. And it kind of reinvigorated the whole thing for them. It got them back from where it was a low ebb to back into a bit of positivity. Like, is that something that... I suppose is important that they like aware of going back to basics.
I think it's something that's nearly forgotten at the moment. I think people have your elite setups, your elite training grounds, your elite everything, your gear, the players are pampered. And I think a lot of the basic and the rawness is lost at the moment. And I think like, say you strip it all back and you're sent out to the Phoenix Park and you're running up the hill and there's no glam in that. But it kind of gives you a bit of the grit between the teeth, you know. And I think a lot of that can be forgot, you know, which I think is important, to be honest. I think it's important to go back to the start and what kind of got you there and what you need to succeed. But that's my thinking on it. I'm not sure if that's...
Why from the fee to county players this summer, why did they enjoy going back to their club so much?
I thought Brendan Hackett came out, the other Ballymun manager came out and was really good when he said, like, we stripped it right back and we had great fun training and the lads had great fun going up to the sessions and it was all just fun and there was a lot of fun. And he kept talking about that. That was really interesting because it's very rare you would hear a top class manager or a top class team talking about the fun aspect of it. No. I'm sure it is fun for them and I'm sure it's fun when you're winning, but to come out and actually say, let's have a bit of fun here. You know, and they were by far the best team in Dublin this year as a result. No, I'm not saying it's a result of the fun, but they looked like a completely different team, you know.
Like the players enjoy it more because they're out on the pitch the whole time. Like they're not supposedly they weren't in looking at videos or studying analysis or spending an hour on tactics in the dressing rooms because they weren't allowed. So they're out on the pitch. Is that one of the reasons why Intercounty enjoyed it as much this year? Or is it just because they got to play at the club for X amount of weeks in a row?
I think personally, Massey, the fact that they weren't burnt out from the season they had with the county, I think that's a huge thing. Like there was one of the managers of the hurling teams there last weekend said that, you know, the players came back and they enjoyed being with the clubs for a change. I know I could be quoting that small bit wrong, but it kind of gave the illusion that the players didn't enjoy ever being with the clubs before this year. And they're kind of going, well, is that because he burned the shite out of them during the season, trying to get your pound of flesh where you're doing four or five get-togethers in a week and the players are giving their whatever could be up to 30 hours of commitment time, be it studying, video analysis. And then when they do go to the club in August, September, October, they're just flat. And all of a sudden this year, they did the club first. like which I think is great in that the players were able to play with the club. And we spoke about it when I seen like a player from Cork up in Westport the week before a club match, championship match, but if it was a Cork senior game, he never would have been up there. And I think it's important, but like, I know they're talking about split season now again in 2 years, but they're talking about the inter-county finishing in July. Are we still going to have players then that are going to be going, fucking hell, I'm drained after such a compact, hard season? And if they do get to the latter stages, they're coming back to the club, and the club are basically going straight into championship where they might. And I'd imagine a lot of clubs will go on group stage if they're not already there, where they could have 3 games in a very short period. So the player might be carrying knocks, niggles, just won't enjoy it as much. So I don't know, is that something? But I just thought, like, when the manager is saying that they enjoyed it for once, you know, you're kind of going, like, I suppose, is that contempt that county managers hold against clubs? That the player it's an inconvenience for the players to play with their club.
But if you can go back to the times when you were back playing, can you remember like your most enjoyable training sessions that you've had?
Yes, summer and sweating and there being 30 plus people in the field and you just play a match, like.
Absolutely. Like it's the change of scenery. I always remember that, like you go train at the beach or something there. I remember one time we were going for a trip away, a night away, and we climbed Crowpatrick in the morning and then played the match in the afternoon. But something different, and it was enjoyable and it was fun. Even having a match, and then all of a sudden the coach blew the whistle and he grabbed us all in and we just had a scrum. Like, none of us have had a scrum in rugby and what it was for. But you look back and remember, it was just to break up the session, whatever might not be going well or something, and we just did it and everyone came out with a smile on their face and everyone started putting an effort in straight away again afterwards. And it wasn't him grabbing us in and giving us a bollocking. He just said, come in, all right, let's have a scrum. A scrum, whatever, did it for about 3-4 minutes. We started beating the heads of each other, then back and playing. Everyone had a smile on their face and everyone started you know, going at it more and enjoying it.
The introduction at the end of a football session of ground football only. It was just completely novel and different than just, you know, just really enjoyable, and you're kind of coming away laughing, and it's not just that you're marking someone who's after scoring 3-3 off you and you're deflated, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, like Paul there has said, like, I can't really remember any in particular ones that I really enjoyed more than anything else, but like during the summer when the evenings were long and the evenings nice nights and there was good numbers and you'd play a match, like they were definitely the best trains. But I can tell you the fucking bad ones. I can tell you about being up in Tyman Park in 6 inches of muck running around and going, oh man, I'm not cut out for this crack anymore. Like, and I remember vividly, and even that, I can remember all the sluggy ones, but I said, I don't think of anything that really stands out. But they enjoyed that day going down playing with the street hockey with the lads. Like, they did enjoy that. You know, there was a buzz about them after that wasn't there beforehand. And like, I don't know, was it the night before that or 2 days before that when they played the match? And was it the time they got beaten, actually? And he got them back out and he did a hard Brooks again. Again, and he ran the crap out of them. So, like, and I think the reason they played Iceland as opposed to Russia was because they didn't want to be a complete rip off of the miracle.
There was a bit of a rip off in the film now, in fairness.
Yeah. So, I think for them, for the kids, and for the players to be able to reset is important. And I think that was something that you took out of that. And like you're talking about, things that you did or would have done or might have happened like that in your past. And there are things you kind of remember and you enjoy. Like, so it is important to be able to kind of just press the reset button, get back to actually why you're down here. How did you feel he dealt with bringing the new players into his panel? No, like having all of the Ducks who barely scraped through their title the year before, there was obviously better player. Well, maybe there wasn't. And you had 3/4 of them basically on the national team then the following season or 2 years later or whenever it was. How do you feel he handled bringing in the new players into it?
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of, we'd say, a minor manager coming up and taking over the senior team straight away and bringing in 7 or 8 of the lads who came up with him as through the underage rank, and they're kind of straight into the senior setup. Like, there's often that kind of loyalty and often blind loyalty there to a group of people you've worked with closely for a good length of time, and it can be a difficult to deal with, because even though you need to be trying to treat people similarly, that built up relationship there kind of muddies the water a little bit. And I think Bombay in this film done very poorly at it. we'll say particularly on the goalkeeper side of things with Goldberg and goal. Obviously, he was a big character for the team, but he clearly wasn't the best goalkeeper there. Like,
and so like he had that, like he did have that interaction with where the cat said she wanted to get game time basically, and like he just said you'll get your chance. He didn't give her any when she get her chance or how she get her chance. Just said she'd
or
get
what
her
does
chance.
He need to do to get her chance? Like he didn't offer anything in that scenario, and like I would have liked it. Obviously, it's a kids' film, it's a Disney film, but if she challenged back a little bit more in that scenario. Because I don't think he had the appropriate answers.
So what advice would you give to a coach who goes up to, say, take an adult team from being a minor or going into inter-county setup with his players from his own team might be involved in there? What do you think? You tend not to jump in, not to make any decisions straight away, just to have a look at what he has?
What I would say is, and this happens a lot, right, that people develop biases. And obviously he has, we'll say, be it like everyone has positive or negative something that happened in the past. And that kind of stands out a little bit more than that happened a little bit more recently. Like, you know, that primacy bias of, oh, well, you know what? He done it for me at an under 16 county semi-final. Sure, again now. Like, just need to be wary to guard against that. While it can be beneficial to have that belief in players, you can't ostracize the new cohort of players that you haven't built up that relationship with, you know?
Well, he was probably true to his word, though, when it came down to it, the crunch moment when the game, he threw her in and she made the save. So he did actually give her a chance and she did make herself.
Yeah, but if they hadn't got the draw, she would have got no game time. He wasn't changing her. He wasn't changing her in the second half, the third quarter, the second, third.
But in saying that, like, your man Goldberg, going back to the film, didn't do anything wrong. He wasn't at fault. He was actually pulling off good saves. I think he was probably the most mentioned Ducks player. Be it save. So,
and he's a great teammate. Like, every time she went in, he was, you know, you do what you know. And even the time she went in, you know, he was a good teammate. Yeah. And he was.
She also got
as well.
She also got a chance she got sent off.
True. True, she did actually. You're correct, Stephen. Very fair point.
Mas, I did watch the film.
Is that about my Ducks one?
You can watch that as well. It's on Disney. Yeah. So anything else? Anything else to add in it, lads? Like I said, other than that, like the, I don't think he did anything else. I think Charlie, in fairness, pulling himself off the panel to get Banks on was a noble call from Charlie.
On that, right?
So weak.
What do you mean weak, Mas?
Charlie was weak.
You know what? I think you're wrong, actually, Mossy. I think he's extremely strong to do that. He's extremely strong to do that. And the one thing Bombay done that I really liked is when Charlie made that decision that he had him involved on the match day side of things is, well, you're a coach now. Now, obviously, that's not the extent to go to. But be it him being Mayor Kamon or Mayor Ishka or whatever it is, just being on the bus, I think is an important thing to have there, you know. So I did think Bombay dealt with that well.
Charlie gave up one, and if he wasn't a good enough player, the coach should have noticed that themselves and pulled the plug on him.
Just on that as well, you're talking about the coach, the Icelandic coach. I know you were giving out though with his verbal.
Stadoil man.
He had all his homework done at the start of the final, so he was able to nullify. So you were talking about coaches copy coaches, Colin. Remember, he actually kept looking at him, and every play that Bombay tried to make, he had the answers for it. So, like when he threw out the flying V, they smashed it up. Whereas the knuckle puck, remember when your man came on to do the knuckle puck, he had his plan ready for that. So, actually, Bombay then had to think on the spot, but he kind of gave his back to root speech, and then it all went right because they're the Mighty Ducks, of course. But, like I thought, from a coaching point of view, he had his homework done on where their threats came from.
Yeah.
And was able to nullify that.
Yeah. Like, no, again, it goes back to the same as the first one.
Important part of it as well.
Bombay pulled it out of the fire with trick plays again, you know. Stuff that you wouldn't get away with in a normal match. But for the sake of the, I suppose, the film, there were things that they did, you know, with putting in Russ as Goldberg. But I suppose, anything else to add in the film other than that? Like, look, they got the W in the end, I suppose, in a roundabout way. Any favourite lines or scenes from the film?
No.
No, just one line I thought was very funny was when Keenan said, "I bet if that puck was a cheeseburger, you'd stop it," he said to Goldberg. And yeah, so that was probably it. Anything else, Fitzy? Anything else to add in the film or Coach Bombay?
No, look, Ducks for Life. It was good. Like, you know, it brought back the memories.
Go on, what are we giving out of five? So, Fitzy, you can go first. It can be any number between 0 and 5. It can be 1.2 or 3.7 or whatever you want.
Look, it's an old-school, feel-good Disney movie. You wouldn't be reading too much into the coaching end of it, but look, I enjoyed the nostalgia of watching it, so I'd give it a good 3.
We're not rating the film now, we're rating Bombay.
Yeah, well, like, he got the W, got the job done. Okay. Do you know what part I didn't like, though? When he didn't show up. So the match had started and the coach had to, the tutor had to sit in as a coach.
Take a point out for
good.
That.
She was good.
He's only getting a 2 off me. No.
2.
Sorry, right. What was the whole point of what he was doing there?
Dramatic entrance.
With the whistle.
I think it, maybe the Anaheim Angels head coach might have done something similar the following season. I'm not sure. Anyway, go on, Paul Massey, scores.
I'm going to give him 1.75.
I'm rounding down up to 1.8, Massey. I'm not going to 0.75.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
Okay. Any reason, no? Happy enough?
Yeah, no, I just thought his attitude got a bit big-headed. He didn't give, like, arriving late for a game is just not on.
Yeah.
When he's meant to be there.
Yeah. Paul?
Yeah. It's painful.
A solid 1 from me.
Solid 1. Okay. And what got him to 1, Paul, I suppose?
He got the W.
Yeah.
Very few redeeming characteristics.
I'll give him a 2.3 from me. I didn't think he was that bad, but I didn't think he was good enough to break parity either and be an average score. So
you make mine 1.7 and add up evenly there for you, Colin.
Perfect. Thanks, Massey. You're so good to me. Perfect. Thanks very much, Stephen, for coming on, and thanks for taking the time out of your hectic schedule to join us.
Lads, thanks for having me. It's great to be part of this project that you have going on. No, fair play, lads. And keep up the good work. Yeah.
You anything to plug, any books on sale or anything?
No, all good. No, nothing in the pipelines as of yet, no.
Okay.
Good man. Thanks, Stephen. Thanks, Massey.
Okay. So just one thing, Cullum. If anybody has listened to the show here and haven't watched D2 yet, I suggest you actually go back and watch Miracle.
Yeah. Oh, well, Miracle's a way better film anyway, yeah.
Way better film.
And way better coach.
Way better coach.
Still the highest scoring coach in the our era podcast.
The history.
Yeah. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Massey.
No bother.
Thanks, Cullum.
Thanks, Stephen.
Thanks for joining us today. Please leave a review on your favorite platform, and if you enjoyed it, tell a friend. You may also want to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Roy Orbison Tattoo. We appreciate any likes, retweets, comments, and any feedback at all is welcome. Next week, we will be watching Moneyball, and we'll have the show available first thing Tuesday morning as always. Thanks, everybody.